Hello and welcome back to The More From Grace. I'm today's host, Henry. We're joined by two very special guests today as we discuss the Rugby Europe Championship. I'll first be speaking to commentator Dave Rogers before myself and Toby speak to the one and only Francisca Wiser. The Rugby Europe Championship is an annual tournament held as the tier below the Six Nations. This year's tournament has seen eight sides split into two pools, with Georgia set to take on Romania and Portugal hosting Spain in the semi-finals, before a grand final weekend to determine the rankings 1-8 in Paris on the 17th of March. Georgia are the reigning champions, having won the past six editions. Now let's meet Dave Rogers.
I'm Dave Rogers. I'm a commentator for the Rugby Europe Championship, among a few other things, but really, really enjoy it. So whether it's Rugby Europe Championship, Rugby Europe Super Cup, getting the opportunity to watch these Tier 2 nations bring players through, really put on a show and be on the journey is pretty amazing.
So first question is, why should people watch the Rugby Europe Championship?
Because the rugby's great. And if you're a rugby supporter, we all sort of fall into our little categories, don't we? So you've got some who say they're massive rugby fans, but it just means that they watch the Six Nations once a year. And you've got some people who say they're massive rugby fans, but they might only follow their Premiership or their URC club. And you've got some people who say they're massive rugby fans and go to their local club on a Saturday afternoon with their mates and with their family. But if you are a massive rugby fan, then every now and then you get the realisation that rugby's a much bigger sport than you realise. And that's come at a few times in my life. Firstly, when I was a young man growing up in Wales, everything came through club rugby, and we all used to love watching the national sides, and before rugby went regional, the top class club sides. But then when I moved to England, I realised how big the school's rugby game is. It was school boys then, but now school girls as well. And that really opened my eyes. And, you know, you think you know everything about rugby, but then you realise that there's more international teams in the traditional Northern Hemisphere and Southern Hemisphere, and the emergence of the likes of Argentina and Italy and the brilliant rugby they play down in Japan. But then you hear whispers about, oh, you know, Georgia might be all right. And you're like, oh, Georgia are good. And then you check their results and you see that Portugal have given them a really good game and Spain have given them a really good game. And previously, Russia have given them a really good game. You're like, oh, well, how on earth has that come about? And then you discover the Rugby Europe Championship and you see that Georgia are a really good team and Portugal are a really good team and Spain are a really good team and Romania, who used to be a powerhouse and have beaten so many tier one nations traditionally, are a really good team. Then you've got your emerging nations as well, Netherlands and Germany and Poland and Belgium, that are really being backed by world rugby and really, really improving as well. So it's an opportunity to expand your rugby horizon, expand your rugby repertoire. And I think the World Cup last summer taught us that these top nations are really producing great players, really playing an awesome brand of rugby. And if you watch the Rugby Europe Championship, then perhaps it's the realization that outside of the top 10, 12 countries in the world, there is some brilliant rugby, some enjoyable rugby, and perhaps internationally, it's a much bigger, more popular and exciting sport than we all realise, which is quite a massive statement, given it's already a massive, brilliant and popular sport that we're all completely in love with at that level. But it's certainly expanded my horizons. And I think if you watched it and enjoyed it, then you would too. Also, the fact that it's free. There's a lot of talk about rugby being behind paywalls at the moment, but Rugby Europe are working really hard through their platform on Rugby Europe TV to make sure that every Rugby Europe Championship game is free to air, and the Rugby Europe Super Cup as well. And you can't ask for more than that, can you?
That's why you mentioned it being free. There's also the whole thing of it's being played during the Six Nations. They're playing it around those matches. They're playing the semi-final and the final, so it doesn't clash with the Super Saturday. They're playing the finals on the Sunday afterwards. They're playing their semi-finals on the Fallow Week. So do you think that's something that they're really working towards, try to sort of capture that rugby market?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's a really busy schedule. So the tournament is split up this season into two pools of four teams. The top two from each pool are going to go on to play on those semi-finals that you mentioned, and there's some brilliant games to look forward to. And then the finals, for the first time, they're putting them all in the one venue in Paris. It's on the 17th of March. Tickets are still available, and Ben Fox from Rugby Europe will be delighted that I've put that in. But I think it is important to tap into a target market, and that target market is international rugby fans. And if you are watching international rugby, then naturally you know about the Six Nations. But if you love it and you fancy going somewhere else, I mean, some of the occasions, that weekend in Belgium where Belgium beat Portugal, packed stadium. We've had packed stadiums in Georgia and Netherlands and Portugal and Romania this weekend. They had an absolute humdinger with Portugal. A couple of the tries have gone viral because, trust me, Portugal are playing some code. And I'm sure we'll talk about that in a bit. But in these nations, there is great rugby following. So to go to watch a home game at one of these countries would be an amazing experience. But to get the fans from the, let's call them, and I'm not sure I like this term, but I'm going to use it anyway, more traditional European rugby supporting nations. If it's a choice of watching, I don't know, say you and I, for example, I'm a Wales supporter, you're an England supporter. If it's a choice of watching Wales v England or Georgia versus Portugal, even though they're both great games, you and I are always going to go for Wales versus England, aren't you? But if Wales and England aren't playing and you can watch some great rugby Europe and you can watch Romania versus Spain, or you can watch, I don't know, Belgium versus Netherlands, you're going to give it a go, aren't you?
Oh, 100%. And I suppose also you can tap into that weekend away market. Imagine a weekend away watching rugby in Amsterdam. We saw Sia Khaleesi up watching the Netherlands in Amsterdam, a short trip up from Paris for him. You mentioned the standard being great, but it's also a strange mix of professionalism and amateurism. So what is that standard like?
Well, I think the World Cup told us a lot about it, didn't it? I mean, the fact that Portugal managed to beat Fiji, given the fact that Fiji gave Wales hell and England hell, tells us exactly how good some of those players are. Georgia have been there or thereabouts for absolutely years. For some of the nations, so Chris Hitt, he's the head coach of the Polish team, and he's from Wales. And I think for some of the teams, for his Polish team in particular, he's spent a lot of time looking at various leagues around Europe to see if there are Polish eligible players. Whereas you look at the Romanian team, a load of those players are qualified through Romanian clubs. Because, you know, traditionally, you talk back in the 80s and the 90s, they were a rugby powerhouse, but then professionalism comes in. It doesn't come in there as quick as it comes in for some of the other countries, and they're kind of back to square one. Then I look at the Spanish team, the captain that they've got at the moment, Mario Picciardi. He's been, well, he used to be with Wasps Academy, then he gave up his EQP status to play for Spain, now captain of Spain. He's currently playing at Loughborough University, captain of the Buck Super Rugby team, but also playing in the National 2 team, but is kind of above that level. And it's, you know, where he goes club rugby wise, the next step after graduating. But the game I did at the weekend, a lot of these Portuguese players, they're playing in French leagues, you know, they're playing in Pro de Deux. They're looking at the potential of playing in top 14 at the very top end of the Rugby Europe Championship. We're talking about the very top end of players who really can mix it in the top divisions.
So with players in those leagues, do you think the Rugby Europe Championship's almost being used as a breeding ground, finding those future gems, finding those players that could make it in the top 14 or the Pro Day Deux or even in the Premiership?
Yeah, I think it probably reflects where everyone's at in terms of world rugby at the moment. And I think, again, we'll use Portugal as an example. I think the fact that a lot of those players are playing in France is quite important because it's going to make them better players, but it asks the same old questions, doesn't it? We're to play international rugby, what do you do? Do you find the match day 23 that are the very best 23 players that are eligible to wear that badge on the chest and represent whatever country in the world it is? Or do you select the players that came up through the program? So, Wales, they've got the 25 cap rule as a way to try and keep those players in the regions and playing in the URC. Scotland have got probably the best international team they've had for a generation, but a lot of those players didn't come through the Scottish Academy system and are Scottish qualified. And I know that they've got people like Peter Walton, who puts in an unbelievable amount of miles up and down the country every week to watch players at grassroots level and at different academy level to see if they've got the quality to wear the Scottish jersey. And then England, a lot of those players come through a really powerful schools program and then filter up through Premiership academies. So there is definitely talent in all of these rosters that could certainly play top two divisions in a lot of these countries. But I think just looking across the length and breadth of the Rugby Europe Championship and how they're identifying their talent and how they're keeping their talent is really interesting. So Georgia, for example, there are a few players who are scattered around, well, a couple in the Premiership, a couple in the top 14. But they've come up with Black Lion, who compete in the Rugby Europe Super Cup, as a way of professionalizing that international group and making sure that they're coming together and playing good rugby outside of the international window too. So what we're discovering is there's sort of more than one way to skin a cat, and what do they say? A rising tide raises all ships, and all of these countries are getting a lot better year on year. If you look at Poland's results and Germany's results, and particularly Belgium's results, maybe they're not winning the games, but the score lines are reducing. We're having much better contests, and even the game at the weekend where Portugal ended up pulling away towards the end against Romania for 60 minutes. That was an awesome contest, and we saw some great tries in front of a full stadium. So that's success in international rugby for me.
You mentioned it with the Rugby Europe, with the Super Cup. Do you think having teams in sort of the less even Rugby Europe Championship nations, like the Tel Aviv Heat, like Bohemia Warriors, I think it is, having those teams in the Czech Republic and in Israel and having that wider reach is just going to help them rise into this competition as well?
Well, I hope so. And we're talking about the Rugby Europe Championship today, but there are tiers that go a little bit lower down. And I've been lucky enough over the years to visit some of those. So I went to do a Rugby Europe trophy game in Switzerland, and we flew out to Geneva. And it was certainly a different experience to doing, I don't know, an England game at Twickenham or a France game in Paris. But it was international rugby, everyone was incredibly proud to be there. They were all at that level. They were all effectively paying to play. Like, you had to fund your own way. You had to fund your own kit to an extent to play for Switzerland. But it was international rugby, and it was a pathway, and it was representative rugby. And regardless of whatever country it is, at whatever level, if you're good enough to play for your country, then I think that's something that we should celebrate in any sport at anything. With regards to the Super Cup, I think it's an absolutely brilliant tournament. As you mentioned there, the Bohemia Rugby Warriors, they had their first year in the competition this year, and I think it was probably a bit of an eye-opener for them because they tried to use that as a real development team, if you like. A lot of young players coming through, thinking about a way that they can get them competitive rugby. But you put a group of under 23s in from Czech Republic against a full tilt Black Lion who are mostly test match internationals, then you're going to work out exactly where you are quite quickly, and it's probably not as far along as you'd like that group to be, but they're going to learn from it. Certainly playing against players of that caliber is going to improve their skill set, so it'll be really interesting to be on the journey with them. And Tel Aviv Heat, they had Semi Kunitani playing for them this year. They are an attractive proposition, and they have been perennial finalists in that competition. So the fact that we've got a team from Israel who can put a match day 23 together that can be incredibly competitive with a match day 23 from Georgia or from Portugal or from Spain tells us that again, it's perhaps a wider global game than we all realize.
So, looking back to the this season's Rugby Europe Championship, who and what has impressed you?
Portugal's resolve, because it was always going to be a difficult tournament for them. They had such a great World Cup and they won so many fans globally, but then a few players retire. A few players just needed a rest because they have put in back-to-back seasons, club seasons, international seasons. But after that defeat against Belgium, I think the widely held belief was, oh, goodness me, have Portugal peaked? I think the answer is no. They've scored best part of 100 points in the last two games. And some of the young stars that we are getting a glimpse of for the first few games. So Camacho at scrum half, Aubrey at outside half. That halfback pairing is brilliant. And then Nicholas Martins, who scored two outrageous tries at the weekend. And thankfully, that's put him in the shop window, because we were talking about clubs and his club filed for bankruptcy a couple of weeks ago, so I've no doubt he'll be snapped up soon. Yeah, it's great to see that conveyor belt of talent. Hopefully for them, some of that talent will be in the tight five, because that's always a problem for emerging nations. I mean, goodness me, it's enough of a problem for Wales, let alone Portugal, trying to find competitive tight five forwards. But their resolve and their talent conveyor belt is superb. Really impressed with Belgium to get that victory in front of a capacity crowd. Not just the performance on the pitch, which was really sort of niggly and needly and exactly what they needed. They made it a big physical contest and managed to take their opportunities and get that win. But the fact that they could put on an amazing event in front of a sellout crowd. Germany and Poland have got an awful lot better. Netherlands, again, just vastly improving. I mean, they've got Lynn Jones there now, who's a great coach, and he's somebody that World Rugby have helped them to sort of hire, and he'll identify talent and he'll bring them on. So these emerging nations have really impressed me. And Georgia just keep on going. Do you know what? I've pretty much just named every team there, haven't I? So it's important
Just
to
shows the
talk about.
standard.
Well, it does, but it's important to talk about Spain as well, because they've had their difficulties with, let's call them political near misses and rugby World Cups, and they're a great sporting nation, a great rugby nation, and their ambitions will be to win the Rugby Europe Championship and qualify for a World Cup. And the way they're playing now, they've finished second in Pool A. They've got a mouth-watering semi-final coming up against Portugal. They've got to travel to Portugal for that. So why not? You know. So yeah, what has impressed me? The regeneration of the traditional powerhouses at that level, and the constant evolution of the emerging nations.
And just finally, that try by Lucas Martins at the weekend. I don't think we
Oh.
can not talk about that.
Well, there's the two of them, isn't there? So there's Nicholas, the young winger, who got on the end of. I mean, which one are you talking about? Are you talking about the crossfield kick, or are you talking about the one late on where he's handed the final defender off in his own 22 and gone in from 70 odd meters? The one where he's ended up on the end of the high ball was so brilliant, because their set piece wasn't going particularly well. And you hear it with teams all the time, their DNA, their identity. And it only seems to be teams who like to run the leather off it who get referred to like that. And Portugal seemed to have slightly shied away from that, but they thought, right, we need to win this game. How do we win it? We win it by tempo, and we win it by doing what we're great at. There's no point going to the set piece, because that is what Romania is so well coached at. They've got Gerard, the coach. He's a monster of a guy, and he's given Romania a great scrum and a great line out. So we've got a penalty in our own 22. What do? We tap and go naturally. And it's just one of those ones where everything comes off. You've got Cardoso Pinto, who's one of the most exciting back three players. Do you know what? I'm going to commit to it in the world. He's just so balanced, and He's not scared to roll the dice. And from the moment that kick bounced and he batted it back, in my head, I was thinking, please score. Please score. And then there's that awesome offload over the top where they find Camacho. And I'm like, oh my God, he's shaping up for the crossfield kick. Please land, please land. And it did, and everything about it was perfect. And thankfully, it's got a little bit of traction on social media, and all of a sudden, people are reignited with those feelings that they got in watching Portugal during the World Cup. Now, the fact of the matter is, anyone who's watched the Rugby Europe Championship will know that that's how Portugal have played for years. And sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't. But when it does, you could have been watching any team in any division, couldn't you? You could have been watching the Rugby Championship, the Six Nations, Top 14, Premiership, URC. That level of rugby, that execution of skill sits at the very, very top table.
I think with what you're saying, it was gaining traction on social media. On last I saw on X or Twitter, it was on over 100,000 views.
It
How many
really.
Six Nations clips do you even get that
Well, what I will say is, I'm so glad I didn't butcher the
many?
commentary. Whenever a game finishes, I always think, oh, that went all right. I'll always sort of look at my co-commentator and give him a fist bump and say, oh, no one died. But oh, goodness me, imagine. It happened to a commentator in cricket recently at the climax of a brilliant game of cricket, and they got a fact wrong, and then they corrected themselves, and it's fine because it's not about the commentator, but yeah, oh God, if I'd have messed that up, I'd have kicked myself. But that's where, you hope you get the names right and stuff, but I just become a fan. All I want is for it to be perfect, and it was. I mean, how good was the crossfield kick, by the way, Camacho? Amazing. But yeah, look, 100,000 views, you can't buy, well, you can buy them, but if you can buy them, there's no point. All of those views are organic because people will see that and they'll be like, oh my God, what a try. I want to show my pals that. I want to show the people I know who like rugby that, because those are the kinds of things that people want to see. Yeah, it's great rugby, and it's good stories. And I think what you will find is, if you do get involved, you'll be welcomed by people who want to open the door and say, look at this brilliant thing we've got. Look at all this effort that's going in. Look at, as you say, we've got the blend between professionalism and semi-professionalism. Look at these pros we've got who haven't had the advantages as young rugby players that a lot of people have, but they've still managed to get and play in professional game. And look at these players who've got the ambition to be professional, but they've still got to work as whatever they are, a recruitment consultant or a joiner or a scaffolder or an IT technician or whatever it is they're doing, because that really is the length and breadth of players and ability and livelihoods that there are in the Rugby Europe Championship.
Great insight as ever from Dave. Now it's time to talk to Toby and Francisco Isaac.
Well, hello. My name is Francisco Isaac. I'm a Portuguese journalist that covers, but mainly the European emerging nation scene, or how people used to normally calls it, Tier 2 or European Tier 2 countries. That's basically it. I played rugby for quite a while, and for a long time, and have been in love with the sport since 2006.
Firstly, who are the players to watch in this year's tournament that have been standing out so far and going later in into the semi-finals and the finals?
Well, for years, we have been accustomed to highlight the same Storti, Marta, Gorgatse, Ninhasvili, Kirika, Simionescu. Have a lot of players that in the last 5, 6 years have dominated the Men's Rugby Europe Championship. And what's more interesting that this season is happening that some new guys that no one was expected them to flourish and become such big names for the countries have done well, like Lucas Martin or Martins if in Portugal. It's who is Nicolas Martin, younger brother, scored already 2 tries and in 2 games, almost 300 meters done, which is quite a lot if it's your only second cap with Portugal in a competition so tight as this one. If you check Georgia, you have like Ilias Panarashvili, who is a loose forward with 25-year-old, and in a country where you have Saginaw, Tskheridze, Gorgaze, Chagallone, Georgadze, and you lose, it's tough for you to bloom and get and win a place in the team. But Panarashvili have made it, and in 3 rounds of the Men's Rugby Europe Championship. For me personally, he is one of the three top players of the competition. Then, if you can go to other countries, you have what I call one of the brightest talents in the competition, which is Florian Remus, who plays for Belgium. He's Espoir in Toulouse, and he's a special gifted player. And for this season, he has done so well for Belgium, which is incredible. So we have a long list of players that you can pick and find out how incredible they are. I think Spain has in Mario Picardi, who plays in England in the Bucks competition, and he deserves to go to a higher level. I hope we can go to the championship at least because he has been incredible. He was not going to be the captain. The captain is John Zabala, who plays in the Béziers, probably the leaders at the moment. And Picciardi took the role and just, well, has been shining as a captain, such a young age, and one of the, I think he's certainly to be one of those players that no one will forget in the years to come.
We're actually just talking about him with Dave Rogers earlier for the first interview for this. He was saying it's going to be really interesting seeing where he goes after he's completed his studies. So there'll definitely be something to keep an eye on, whether he stays in England, whether he moves to France, or if he even gets a contract. Hopefully he does. So I guess we'll start with Portugal. We saw during the World Cup their magnificent rise, and then there was sort of a minaring after they lost to Belgium, Belgium at the very start. Could you tell me more about just Portuguese rugby?
Well, Portuguese rugby is, as any nation, it's special in some of its interactions because and this is not a controversial take, but I would say that half of the rugby people in Portugal wants the sport to remain amateur or fully amateur, and of course they want the team to go to the World Cup, but after they don't want the work that takes you to maintain the team at that level. Because it will shake up things. People that have been on the front for on the forefront and manage most of the clubs will have to step down because they are not, well, they're not accustomed to these new times. And so it's hard for half of the of those people to comprehend that we live in a different age. But I know that you in England are suffering the same with some people that want the sport to go back 30 years, and it's impossible because times move forward, or we go with it, and we can do simple add-ons and inputs without, well, losing the value. Or if we try to bring it back, like in Portugal, some people try to do, it will ruin things. And I'll give you an example. In 2015, when some tried to cut off the link with the professional side of the game, who so the players that were in France or England playing, because at the time we had two guys in England in the championship, if I'm not wrong. We went down one division and it was awful. I'm not saying I don't like to play against Poland or Ukraine or Switzerland or whatever. It was not the level that Portuguese fans grew accustomed in the last 20 years, especially after you went to a World Cup in 2007. And so after a very successful 2023 World Cup, of course, there's now half of people that are afraid of taking things to the future. I would say there's a quarter that want to take it but doesn't know how to take it. So they make insane demands like professionalize everything, etc., which things don't work like that now because you can professionalize something without the money and the resources. And there's another quarter that have the ideas and are trying to set up what I hope is a good future for Portuguese radio.
So, outside of Portugal, with tier two European rugby as a whole, how do you see that rise with the Rugby Europe Super Cup and the Rugby Europe Championship as a whole?
Well, the Super Cup, I'm afraid that we won't have it for this season because, well, the unions and others didn't show that the interest it deserves. So maybe the Black Lion are now understanding that they need it because to go to the Challenge Cup, they need any sort of competition to put them there because you just can't be invited year after year to go there. They need competition during the season. And it worked so f well between 2009, 2021 and 2023. And let me say that part of the Portuguese success on the World Cup was due to the Super Cup. Because we had players like Appleton, who for 8 games played high level game besides the national team. So it was good for him. If you add those games of the Super Cup to the national team, Appleton, who's living in Portugal and playing in Portugal, had 20 good games in a season. If you take out the Super Cup, you only had 12, and half of those 12 he m might have needed to get in form and in tune what the international rugby demands. So for these countries, some not see the value in it, but if you look to the players' development and growth, be it in the Delta squads, in the Brussels Devils, even in the Romanian Wolves, who now play basically with their champions, with Baia Mare, who is coached by former Romanian head coach Eugen Apioc. It helped, and it's been one of the reasons for growth. Now, I don't know what will happen in 2024, but when you have such a good season of a men's rugby Europe Championship, and I can say to you that is a success. We have never had this amount of engagement at the beginning of the competition before the semifinals. Normally, the heat on social media turns up in the semis and in the finals. And this year, the heat started before round one, which is like big. And well, we hope that with the engagement and the fans going crazy with the teams and not and it. It isn't only the fans from Portugal or Spain, it's fans all over the world. The teams might understand they need to keep pushing, even if, well, you're going to be to go under for a bit and have a bit of debt, but you need it in professional sports to, well, win big money 2 years after.
A large proportion of the Portuguese players, and a few Spanish, few Georgians, will play in the French division, or in sort of the French tiers. How much of an impact do you think that that has on the Portuguese growth over the past few years, that they're actually being able to play sort of somewhat professionally, semi-professionally, and getting a lot more consistent high level rugby, perhaps?
You can divide it in two. You have the Portuguese French or Portuguese Spanish or Portuguese Georgian or whatever you call Portuguese Georgian, Georgian French or Romanian French that, well, were born and raised in France and went through the academy system and became seniors and are now playing for their, well, countries that their parents or grandparents belong to. Those bring input massively. But then you have the Martins, the Stortis, the Ninhaishvilis that had. Well, the luck that a rugby agent or scout saw him and said, okay, we have to hire this kid and bring it here. And for the country, this is necessary because it's such a high quality of game that the players, when come to the national team, and it's not only one player nowadays, it's like 10. And those 10 bring a mindset that will push the other guys, even if the other guys are amateur, like you find in Portugal, Spain, or semi-pro, whatever you want to call it, and push them. And that's, I think that's one of the foundations that Patrice Lescure of Portugal brought again. Because between 2014 or 2015 and 2019, Portugal simply said they didn't want to call any player that was a professional in France. Even Tencourt and Lima, who were in the time, and well, Glent, who was playing not in Newcastle, even they didn't want to call them. And after, and you can see the difference. They started coming in droves to the national team. Portugal did this, and it happened the same thing with Spain, etc. The only downside, and I think people will notice this weekend against England, is when the French competition are going on, it's complicated to get the players or all the players in the same weekends. Maybe for the semifinals in the Europe Championship and the finals, but normally. For example, I know that some Portuguese players in Spanish agreed to come to one or two rounds at max. But if their clubs needed them back, the union had to say yes. But because most of these unions in off World Cup years, so off World Cup qualification years don't pay salaries. So the players come willingly, but won't get a dime out of it. So look, they can't play 3 weeks straight and they're Predator club or top 14 club like at home waiting for them. And these players nowadays aren't just reserves or replacement units. They're starters. You know, you could say that Bezier without Fernandes and Samuel Marques might have lost two or three games in 2023. This year, every game that Grenoble didn't have José Madeira, it was worse for them. And he, for example, in January, he got injured in the hand. He didn't play for the national team. And after three straight losses, he came back into Grenoble. And, well, they won. And he was one of the best players in the pitch. So that's the good the good side, that countries like Georgia, Portugal, Romania, Spain, even Netherlands are growing as representative countries in this French competition. It's not in England, because England have, well, they are worse with lending players to the national sides. You had the example from that guy from Kenya, Adjojo, I'm not remembering his name, but because he wanted to play in Dubai against Portugal, Hong Kong, and USA, his club, which was...
Was that Northampton?
I think it was Northampton. They ripped his contract off. And, well, since that point, it was horrible for his career. He's not playing Dax, but he is still Espoir level Dax. It's very complicated. So nowadays, it's getting better. There's an ongoing flux of young players going to France to play. And that is necessary for the teams to grow and become, well, more in tune with test match level that they want to play, which is against England, Wales, Australia, and whatever.
So you mentioned it about the England A match. I only saw actually yesterday when you tweeted it that it wasn't going to be a full strength Portuguese side, because in England it's been marketed as this is Portugal. Portugal are coming to England. We're going to send our sort of second string side and that's it. Could you shed a little bit more light on that whole situation?
Well, when the game was first promoted back in November, if I'm not wrong, when England published the fixtures for 2024, I remember warning everyone, please don't take this as a Portugal full-on team. It's going to be Portugal A, because there's a men's rugby Europe Championship going on March and February and March. So they won't be able to put out their best squad. It's impossible. If the French clubs already, and I get them, well, are not happy with the players coming for the men's rugby world championship, but they let. Now imagine it for a game that doesn't count for the world rugby ranking, doesn't count as a cap, doesn't count as anything. It's only for good promotion of the game. But you cannot tell that to a professional side that pays, well, a salary, has games to win. And well, it's complicated. So Portugal won't field its best team. And I might say it's It's not even their second best team. And I think it's strange. You will still have the chance to see Appleton, Cardoso Pinto, José Lima, Manuel Picão, Pedro Lucas, who played in the World Cup. But I'm going to be honest, no Martins, or even that other new Martins brother, Hugo Camacho, the new scrum half, Hugo Bri, they can't. Because the clubs recalled immediately, and they can't go to play for Portugal against England. So, well, it works like with you, it's an England A side. You cannot tell me that half of these players are going to play for England in the next 3 years, because they won't. But for the Portugal is going to use the fixture as the same. They're going to launch a series of newcomers that might have a shot to play one or two matches for Portugal in the next 3 years, but it's not in any way close to a full strength Portuguese side.
So with the knockouts, with the finals, the finals are all happening in Paris. I saw yesterday the Georgia captain, Merab Sharakadze, saying he doesn't, in a post-match interview, he didn't understand why the finals are in Paris and why, for example, Georgia couldn't host it, or a team that's actually playing in the tournament. What is the reasoning for them being in France?
Well, I work for Rugby Europe, so I can't directly comment on the question made of Sharikadze's words. I get him. I understand, because if you win the top of your pool and you win your semi-final, you want to play the game at your own stadium. But look, Portugal also was able to win their pool. And if they win the semi-final against Spain, if they went to Tbilisi to play against Georgia, it's not fair. Right, because it's not neutral. You can say that Georgia won more points in the pool stage, okay, fair, but it's not how it works. So I think Paris is certainly the best course of action for me. Yes, last year we went to Badajoz in Spain, which was good. I think was positive. It was not incredible, but the promotion, you could see that there were quite a chunk of fans that weren't from Portugal or Romania or Georgia or Spain that went to the stadium to watch the game, which is good. But in Paris, in Stade Jean Bouin, you cannot tell me it's not going to be like incredible. All eight sides in Paris to play a full weekend of good rugby. So I understand Merab Sharikadze's mindset and, well, disappointment. But look to the other side or the side of the argument. We talk of promoting the game outside of our countries. Going to Paris, which is, well, let's be fair, one of the biggest rugby communities worldwide, and will just help to have even more people at the stadium. And not only that, it's going to be easier to call every one of the players that are in the top 14 and probably so it's a way to sell the game. And I can tell you now that the engagement and the interest from the public with that weekend has been massive. So it's disappointing to not play at home, but things don't work like that. And I think Sharikadze will be very happy when if he wins against Romania in the semifinal. I think he will be very happy when he gets a chance to play in front of like 30 or 40,000 people who will cheer for Georgia, Portugal, Spain, or Romania, or Netherlands, whatever, in that match. And for me, it's a positive.
If it's as big a success as you think it will be, do you think that almost every year they'll just keep going back to Paris, or might they maybe move it around, maybe try one in London, in Twickenham, or the Stoop, or somewhere around here, or possibly and go back to Spain, as you mentioned, and keep moving around as maybe having it, keeping it neutral?
Well, that's an interesting question, because the main problem is this year is not as a non-World Cup qualifying year. So you go to Paris, you play it. If you lose, you won't be very that sad. You'll be sad of losing. No one likes to lose. But in a World Cup cycle, and we still don't know how it's going to be the qualification, because normally it's 2 years qualification. And from what I've heard, it's going to be just 1 year. So it's going to be very weird. It's going to put a lot of pressure in the teams. It's going to be strange. Of course, for example, if we already know the World Cup is going to go to 2014, so at least one extra spot is going to be awarded to Europe. So the team that goes to the final, the two teams that go to the final are qualified. The teams and and the teams that go to the third, fourth place playoff, one of them, the one who wins that game, will go to the World Cup. The other one goes to the repechage. At least it's what I've heard. There's another rumor going on, but that one I don't want to open because it's a Pandora's box for South America and Asia and Oceania. While Paris, it's a great home. Of course, any fan would like they're going to London or Rome or Spain, Madrid. Madrid is a great city to showcase a sports event. But why? But I think France works better at any time, be it Toulouse, because you saw the World Cup. I think the last World Cup was an amazing success. It's easy to go to France for the players. It's easier to go there because they're playing at home. Of course, going to, I would love to be in Lisbon, the finals, in the Estádio da Luz or Estádio Alvalade or Estádio do Dragão, with the main sports arenas. But I don't know if it's that easy because mostly these countries, and let's not look to Romania or Georgia because they are the two only countries that have big rugby stadiums. Romania has a 30,000, 35,000 Stadium Arcum de Triomphe, and George has two stadiums in Afjala, which is one close to the other. But aside from that, Portugal plays in smaller stadiums or has loan pitch to the football scene. The same thing with Spain. I think Bilbao would be a very good capital to play a finals week, but they have to ask for the stadium from the Athletic Bilbao or the Real Sociedad, which is not easy to ask for them, because one game they say, okay, 3 hours of rain won't destroy that the pitch that much. Now say to them, it's going to be 10 hours of rain with 15 guys from each side, so it's going to be completely wrecked, the pitch. So in the future, we might go to Bilbao or Lisbon, Madrid or Romania, but for now, I think Paris is, it's going to be a good test, but I think it will work fine because it's happening, everything there. The Olympics, now is the Olympics. They will have more sports events coming in 2025 and 2026, sorry.
So with, you mentioned engagement, what has been done differently this year compared to previous years? When I was speaking to Dave Rogers earlier, I mentioned that the commentary clip of him with, who was it? Lucas Martin's try had over 100,000 views. When I looked earlier, it was actually on over 200,000 now, approaching a quarter of a million. So what has been done differently this year?
Well, I can tell you that the try has gone over 1 million on with all others, with TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, and so on. What has been doing there different? Well, not more content, but I think after the World Cup, and this is a normal thing to happen, people tend from England or France or Ireland tend to watch emerging nations teams play more in that year, the year that follows, because they fall in love with Georgia or Portugal or even Romania, or and they want to watch. And let's not forget, there's a chunk, and it's very interesting. There's a chunk of the British public that loves Spain. I've heard a lot of questions about Spain in the last 3 years. Do you think they go to the World Cup, etc.? Because Spain went to one World Cup in the 90s, and I think was very romanticized, and it was a great generation, and it was incredible for them to go at that time. So looking to it, there's more content. I think the teams embraced a bit more that they need social media. They need their websites to be more updated. You go to the Polish Rugby Union site, is incredible. It's clean. It's growing. The Deutschland Rugby Union for years didn't pay much attention to it. Now it's providing good information. I think the Belgians are trying to get there, but they work with Sportiplique, which is a media that only works with Rugby, which is an incredible website with a lot of interviews and a lot of information. And you see that for even Spain now has like, how do you call it? It's in the sheds kind of recording, so you can hear Bauza talking, the head coach, cursing or saying the players to do that. And this works. Even Georgia, who is now normally is not a country that likes to open up, because they think when they open up to the public, they expose themselves too much. And well, the opponents are like this at home, taking notes because of one interview, but they're now doing more stuff. And when this type of engagement becomes so big and is circulating this much, it helps. Another thing that helped the engagement is the players. I think no one was expecting for Belgium to defeat Portugal in the first round. And when that happened, I think every fan who was a little bit asleep with the competition just did this. And I have to see this, how Portugal lost against the Belgium. And watch a game, oh, incredible defense. And this might want people to watch more. I think the teams have raised the competitive side of things, because last year you could see that Poland, Belgium, Germany were not in the same level as the others. But look, I commented the Germany, Georgia, and I was shocked of what Germany was trying to do. They were close doing something very, very shocking and spectacular. And that type of, well, level competition with the tries, like Lucas Martins' try, I won't say it's one in a million, because Portugal have scored a dozen of those tries in the last 5 years, and Spain have done also, makes things bigger. Look, this weekend in Bucharest, I know that a lot of fans from all over Europe went there, which is not normal. Normally they have good crowds because Romanians are fully in love with sports. But seeing people from England, from France, from Italy going to Bucharest to watch that match it is something special, and showcases that the emerging nations sell. It's not just an exotic rugby, it sells as a product. Now, the thing is next year, but next year is a World Cup cycle year. So everyone wants to be on board with it and to see who gets out, who gets in, etc. So the engagement from Europe to the unions have went a level above. I think the unions started to work more with Rugby Europe because I noticed that players are sharing more. They want to get more engaged and more familiarized with every social media, and it's working. And now let's see what happens in the future. But one thing that helps immensely is the young generations, like Cardoso Pinto, Stortis, Carmona in Spain, or Niniashvili, are guys that are social media babies, because they grew up with this kind of stuff, with Instagram or Twitter or TikTok, whatever. So of course they like to see them in it. The older guys might don't give a damn, but these young guys like it, and that helps to, well, promote the sport. So let's take a hint from them. Going to social media and put a try with the music might help, even if it's, well, cringe for some.
Toby, you mentioned that you had a friend that actually was at the Romania match this weekend.
Yeah, I did. She absolutely loved it. So she's not like a massive rugby fan or anything by any means. But yeah, she said, because her brother's studying out in Georgia at the moment. And yeah, she went to see Georgia Spain and said it was absolutely crazy. Said that the fans were absolutely mental. Do you think that that's one of the biggest positives of tournaments like this, that the fans always get behind and seem to celebrate the teams no matter what? And obviously they want their sides to win, but the crowd was absolutely crazy by the sounds of it.
Yeah, the crowd is, for me, the best crowds in the Men's Rugby Europe Championship, or the Women's Rugby Europe Championship, is the Spanish. If you have the chance to go to Madrid to Central, it's just like insane. Because even if you're not Spanish, you will want to be Spanish in that match. I didn't go for the Spain Portugal, but I had a lot of friends there, and they said, well, it was hard for us because we lost against Spain, but the atmosphere was just insane. At some point, we thought we were levitating because everyone was, well, having tons of fun, and it gets in a warm embrace of the sport, and it's normal. Even the Georgian in games that are like neck and neck, it's incredible because the fans start to go like riled up, start to go for lelos. It's not, it's aggressive lelos. They won't beat you because they are very nice people, the Georgians, but they are going to get like fired up. The same thing with Romanians. It's for a long year we were seen as like non-rugby countries or put in the corner. And what that does, it's the local communities that stick with the teams become like fired up. And well, with this new, let's call it new age of rugby, of course, the fan of England that likes crowds is going to fall in love with it and wants to be part of it. If I were you, next season, Spain is going to play at least two games at home. I would book tickets to go to Spain because it's incredible. Or book tickets to go to Bucharest because you're going to have such a nice time and you will be very happy with it.
There seems to be a little bit of a divide within the team slightly, other than Belgium's massive victory this year. You've got sort of five teams who played in the World Cup and seem to be very, very good. And I mean, Portugal had a great result against Fiji in the World Cup. Georgia obviously ranked in the top 15 of the world rugby right now and have been under the cusp almost of being promoted or maybe promoted to the Six Nations. And there's been a lot of talk about it. Do you think that there over the next few years they might get more of a chance to actually play against the sort of so-called tier one nations within European rugby and maybe get more of a chance to show why they should deserve a chance and demand a chance to play in the bigger games perhaps?
Well, I think the biggest problem now is the new calendar that's going to start beginning 2026, which is going to seriously diminish the number of games that a team like Portugal or Spain is going to play against Wales or England. That's going to be bad. I don't get why they... I know why they did it, because they want to, well, to retain the money for in the top unions. Thankfully, I think they're taking Fiji with them, so Fiji doesn't drown, because Fiji really deserves, because they have been like 40 years of this, and really deserve a chance to be next to the others. But it's not fair for teams like Portugal, Spain, Uruguay, Georgia, Chile, now Chile. Because, and if this team, look, if you go to a site like Riviera Chive or whatever, and you try to find games between Argentina, main team, with Chile, Uruguay, or Brazil, you will not find anything. You'll find that they play with the A sides. And that's not fair. Argentina is next to Uruguay and Chile and the others. That's not fair. And I think what the new calendar, what's going to do, it's making things worse. So we might have more games in the World Cup or more chances to see these teams because they're going to be 24. So more teams outside of the box will be in it. But with the new calendar, it's over. Look, I know people are going to be pissed with the Portugal A team for against England A. But if the fixture was pushed to November, you'll get better Portuguese side. But because people in the top nations don't fully comprehend our lives and how we work and our obstacles and issues, it's hard to have, well, everything. And if the new calendar didn't come in 2026, I think we might have Spain, Portugal, Wales next year, or might Georgia go to play against England in Twickenham, or England go to Tbilisi, which will be like historical. If Romania gets to their best level, it'd be incredible to France to go to Romania to play against them, because they went there in the 80s and lost against Romania, which is still to this day one of the biggest achievements in Romanian rugby. It was an incredible game, I think. I think with a bit of luck, I can try to find this match to show to everyone else. Man, I think, and with the new calendar, this type of chance for the minors, like some people like to talk, to take down the biggest, won't happen. And that ruins any sport. Look, I'm a football fan also, Portuguese football fan. I get angry when Portugal loses against a smaller union or nation, but at the same time, it's special because there's a chance for that nation to become big because they're going to say, okay, we beat down the team that has Cristiano Ronaldo, Bernardo Silva, and the others. And Ray, we are trying to narrow that chance down and avoid it. That doesn't help anyone. I have friends that are non-Raby fans that say to me, well, Raby has a big problem. It's too elitist in a way of thinking because your sport doesn't like a big team like England to lose a team, to have potential lose against at Spain or against Georgia. Because that happens. And immediately after it, you have 10 reporters saying, England Raby is near its death. It's near its death. Why? Because it lost to Georgia. Look, I've seen the death of Portuguese rugby once. We came back from the dead. So don't tell me that death is final. Physically, for us, it's final. But for a country, for a team, it isn't. There's always a new morning, a new tomorrow. So I think it's a lost chance because these countries have a lot to give. And by doing this, we are just simply saying, okay, we don't want it.
Many thanks to both Dave and Francisco for speaking to us today. Join us next time as we return to Six Nations action on the Mall from Grace.